Good afternoon. Okay, so last time we were talking about components we're going to build a processor out of. And we had two kinds. We had stuff which stored state, notably registers, both bare registers like our program counter, and containers of registers like our register file, and memories like our data memory. And the way things which store state work is that they take in a next value, if they're going to change, and they don't actually change until a rising edge of the clock. And in between the rising edge of the clocks, we have other components take the outputs of these state elements and produce new inputs that will only take effect on the next rising edge. And the way we're building our processor initially in this class is that we're going to run exactly one instruction between each of these rising edges. So during that clock cycle, we're going to take the values out of these state elements and produce all the values that the instruction changes before the end of the clock cycle. And at that next rising edge, those values, the effect of the instruction, that is, will actually happen. Any questions from last time about how these state elements work? Our registers and memories? Okay. So between these state elements, we had various sorts of components that performed actual calculations, the thing our computer actually computes. And sort of the most notable is the one which does what programmers usually think of as the bulk of an instruction. And that's the ALU, which, for example, does the add for an add instruction or the subtract for a subtract instruction. And it's something which takes in two values of our full register size and outputs another value of the same size, performing an operation that we select with some other input signal that's going to be controlled based on the instruction. We also had a utility component. We're going to have to make lots of choices about what value we want to put where. And whenever we need to make that sort of choice in hardware, we need to have some piece of hardware that gets multiple signals in and produces one signal out. We can't just plug multiple wires to the same place from different things. And so we use a mux. And a mux takes in some signal, which is going to be based on the instruction about which of the inputs to select, and effectively wires it up to the output based on that signal. So any questions about muxes or the ALU last time? So we'll be working a lot more with muxes, since it turns out we're going to have a lot of muxes in our processor. Yeah?
Could you elaborate a little more on what select does?
So basically, we number each of these inputs. So A might be numbered 0. B1, and so on. And select contains one of those numbers. So to use this mux, you have to make a circuit which produces the correct number, for example, based on the opcode. Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
So how are those correspondences being set in the mux?
Which wire corresponds to which input on select? That's fixed when the mux is designed. So usually we'll draw muxes such that the top is 0, 1, 2, 3, and so on. But that's not necessarily the case. And fortunately, when you actually get to building your simulated hardware, you'll be doing it in a way where you won't need to think about that. There'll be some abstraction. Yeah.
So in the example on the page, the select signal would be 2 bits to make for 4 options?
Yes, it needs to be at least 2 bits. For 4 options. Yeah.
What is A op B?
That, so for example, there's going to be an input I'm not showing which says what operation to perform for the ALU. So one of them might be add or subtract or XOR or AND. And if it's add, it will be A plus B. If the operation selected is subtract, it will be A minus B, and so on. Okay. So to organize these components, our textbook divides up the process of executing an instruction into stages. Since with our processors we're building, all the changes happen all at once, it's not the case that we're changing different parts of our state in different stages. This is just to divide up where we put the hardware. So you can think about building the hardware to execute an instruction in pieces rather than as one big thing. And the six stages our textbook uses were fetch, which is their name for both reading the instruction, which is what's logically called fetch, and splitting it up, and based on, and also computing where the next instruction is. Their name for reading the register file, which is decode. Then execute, which is where arithmetic happens. And usually, we think of instructions as computing things only if they're like an add or a subtract instruction. But it turns out that a lot of instructions you wouldn't think of as computing things do something in the execute phase that's really arithmetic. Most notably, everything that accesses memory is going to need to compute a memory address. And that's usually going to need to use the ALU because it needs to add two big numbers. So a lot of instructions are going to do something in that execute phase, even if they don't do arithmetic from a programmer's perspective. They do arithmetic because we need to access memory. We need to know what address we're accessing memory at. So after execute, there's memory, which is just the part of the circuit around the data memory. So setting the inputs to about what address to read, whether to read or write, and what value to write if we're writing a value, and getting the value out. Then write back, which is the second half of accessing the register file, where we select what registers we're writing and what values to put in the registers. And finally, PC update, which is the input to the PC register, which on the next clock cycle will become the new instruction we execute in the next cycle. And the idea of this division is that you can think of what do I need to do for this instruction that's related to, for example, doing arithmetic. And you can just work out what stuff goes around the ALU based on that, without needing to think about the whole instruction all the way back to the instruction memory. That's the goal of this division. We'll also use it for optimizing the processor later, but for right now, this is just to help you think about how to build the processor. So you can work step by step. Yeah?
When you say like arithmetic address, are you talking about like stack pointer plus 4 plus 8?
So adding to the stack pointer, yes, is another example of arithmetic we would do in the execute step. Yeah.
So in x86, I know this is y86, but in x86, can instructions do like use the ALU multiple times?
Probably. There's probably, so I'm not sure if someone wanted to build a one cycle x86 implementation, I'm not sure what it would look like. It would definitely have multiple things that look like ALUs to handle that. So we only have one ALU. And we execute every instruction in one cycle. So we can only do one ALU operation. So if we wanted to do more, we'd either need to have a second ALU, or we'd need to decide that we're not doing one instruction per cycle. It's more complicated than that, what modern x86 does. The historical x86 split instructions across multiple cycles. Any other questions? Yeah.
So if you do an instruction cycle, but can only write at the end of a riser edge,
yeah.
Does that mean that like the
we will guarantee the register, you can think of the registers and the memory, they look at the value that was in their input just before the rising edge, and just after the rising edge, they start outputting a new value. So it's safe. That might not be what really happens in hardware, but that's our abstraction. Okay, any other questions? So when our textbook describes each of these phases, they use some variable names, which don't kind of agree with what we use in describing the instructions naturally. And I'd like to go over what those are, because they're useful for understanding the descriptions of the instructions. So in the instruction fetch, we split the instruction into pieces. And the textbook's name for those pieces have this sort of notation which tells you what type of value they are. That's where the names come from. So names starting with val are a name for some 64-bit value, always. Names starting with r are a register number. Names starting with I are some small value, in this case, 4 bits. So our outputs are parts of the opcode and the function code that from the first byte of the instruction that we're going to use to actually decide what to do. And in our textbook, they show producing these values, but they don't show you what actually happens to the values to make that decision. That's omitted from their listings of stage by stage what the instruction does. But when you actually build the processor, you're going to need to make that decision. There's also the register numbers, RA and RB, and those are the register numbers in the instruction itself. And val C, which is the constant value for a move or for a jump. And note that we always have these wires. So we're going to fetch the length of the maximum instruction, 10 bytes, all the time. And sometimes the instruction is not going to be 10 bytes. In those cases, we're going to have to put something on the val C wire, because we can't have a wire which has no signal on it. It's going to be some voltage on each of the lines. But it's just not going to be meaningful if the instruction is only 2 bytes. And we better not use it, because then we're definitely not running the right instruction. So another thing that our textbook does in the instruction fetch phase, for some reason, is compute the next instruction in the program. So it computes the instruction length, which you would do based on the I code, because that tells you the instruction length. You can make a table, and adds that to the current PC, and puts that on a wire it calls val P. So then there's the instruction to code. And the two outputs of that are our values of our two registers, val A and val B. So in the common case, these are just the two registers in the instruction, whatever was in that second byte. But that doesn't always work. If we always read RA and RB, we'd have some problems. So one problem you might think of is, what about instructions which don't need to read one of the registers? Well, reading the register isn't harmful, so that might not be a problem. But there's some instructions which clearly need to access other registers, namely the stack pointer. So the push instruction is going to read the stack pointer to know what memory address to use. That means that one of the registers we read better be the stack pointer. And the same is true for pop, call, and ret. They all need to use the stack pointer to access memory, which means they need to read the stack pointer from the register file. And if val A and val B are our only outputs from the register file, which they are, one of them better be the stack pointer. So you could make a table of what you need to read based on what the instruction is. And this tells you exactly what we're going to have for deciding the register number to actually pass to the register file. So not rather than passing RA from the instruction, we have a value that the textbook calls source A, and another one called source B for RB, which is the actual input register number to the register file to read. And usually, for example, the second source is going to be RB. But sometimes we need to make it RSP's register number. So we're going to have a mux to do that because we need to make a choice. And we're going to take the opcode and use that in some way as the selector of the mux. Any questions about this? Yeah.
So for the register to register move, why do we only have?
Why do we only we only need to read one of the registers?
Oh yeah, okay, yeah.
We don't need. We could read the other register, but we're not going to do anything with it.
Why do you need to read two registers for the register to memory
time? We need to compute. So for the MR move queue and RM for RM move queue, we're going to read a register to store in memory, and we're also going to read a register to add to the displacement to compute the memory address to store the other register at. Yeah. Our textbook might not do that. I believe it is possible to not read anything from our source A, but that might not be what you see in the text. And there's a reason they're doing that, but we'll get to that a lot later. Okay, so after reading registers, we conceptually perform our ALU operation. And the book calls the output of the ALU val-e. This is also where our book will list condition code-related operations. And rather than representing SF and ZF, our book has this signal, which is computed by some circuit that you could build, which takes the second 4 bits of the instruction and uses that to with the SF and ZF bits to decide whether or not if this is a conditional move or a conditional jump, it should be taken or not. And that value is available here. And this is also where some instructions change SF and ZF. And our book just represents that as set condition codes. You can think of it as an output from the ALU that you can put that is put into the condition code register. So we have this ALU operation, and one question you might have is what the inputs of the ALU should be. And if you're thinking about our normal arithmetic instructions, there are two registers. And you might say the ALU inputs should just always be the register values. But that doesn't work, because sometimes we're going to need a value from the instruction. So that means we're going to need a mux in front of the ALU to decide which input to give it, whether it's going to be one from the registers or one from the instruction. And also, we sometimes need constants. We sometimes want to compute the stack pointer plus or minus 8. So we'd like to put a constant there, constant in front of the ALU. And because our ALU inputs are going to be different than our register file output. Sometimes our book has another name for the signals, which are the wire that goes into the ALU, and that's ALU-A and ALU-B. And those are whatever the ALU input values that come out of the mux we have are. So after the ALU, we have our memory phase, and our book names the output of the data memory val-m. So, and And it, when we have our list of instructions, our book doesn't really represent directly the inputs to the instruction memory. It just says you access memory at this address and put it in this place. And the place, the output is called valm, and the book represents that by always putting valm gets assigned memory at some place when listing instruction effects by stage. It doesn't explicitly mention what the address and data lines are set to. And it also never explicitly mentions that write enable input we know we have. We know we always actually need to choose whether or not we're reading or writing to memory. Our book is just going to let that be implied by whether or not its description of the instruction steps lists a write to memory. So the names our book uses for the signals that go into the memory are ADDR and data. And ADDR is the address we're accessing at memory, and data is the value we're writing if writing is enabled. And most of the time, our address is the ALU output, because our standard move instruction just adds two numbers together, and that's our address, our standard move to or from memory instruction. So usually it's the ALU output, but there might be some cases where we would want something else, pop, Q, and rent. And the data is usually the registry read from the related to RB, the second registry read from the register file. But there are also some tricky cases where you might want something else. And to handle these special cases, we're going to need a mux in front of the data memory. Our last step after memory is actually writing our results back. And that doesn't mean literally writing them back in the middle of executing the instruction. It means setting up the inputs to the register file so that when the clock cycle ends, the register file will update those registers. And I showed you a version of the register file where we had like two register number inputs and a write enable for one of them. But that's not the model our book is going to use. We're going to have two inputs, which are register values to write, and two inputs, which are register numbers to write, corresponding to each of those inputs. And when you don't want to write a value, use register number 15. Remember, we only have 15 registers, and they're numbered starting with 0, so there is no register with number 15. So that's what you send to the register file, and if you send that, it will ignore whatever value you told it to write. Just won't write anything. And the reason we have two inputs is because if you look at popq, it turns out it changes two registers. So our register file needs to have two inputs because we can't spend two clock cycles on the instruction. Yeah.
Can you just say that last part again?
So we need to have two inputs because popq changes two registers. It changes the stack pointer and the register that's its argument. And because we execute every instruction in one cycle, we can only change one register per input to the register file per instruction. So we need two. Yeah. Yeah, so there are a total of four register number inputs to the register file, two read and two write. Yeah.
So valm and valm are just
labels. Yeah, so it turns out that our textbook hardwires the inputs to the register file when they describe things. So valm is the same name that we use for the memory output. And in our textbook, they just hardwire that into the register file. They don't have anything in between. And valE is their name for the ALU output, and they just hardwire that. We probably won't be so restrictive when we have you build your simulated processor. But for understanding the text, you should realize that they've just hardwired something when you didn't really have to. And thus, they don't actually have a proper name for these inputs. So after deciding what to send to the register file, The remaining thing we need to take care of is setting the PC so we actually execute the correct next instruction. And usually this is the valp value that is computed in our textbook in the fetch stage. Usually that's exactly what you send as input to the PC, so the next instruction you execute will be the one that follows in machine code. But for control flow instructions, we obviously don't want to just execute the next instruction on a jump or a call or a return. So we'll need a different input. Any questions about these stages? Or any of the... So if not, let's look at sort of an incomplete sort of circuit layout of our processor. So we have our state. We have our PC, our memories, our register file with its four inputs, which are register numbers. And sometimes the ones that are destinations we don't actually want to write to. So we have a mux that lets us select that we want the dummy register number. That means don't write anything. We have two outputs, which are our register values, and two wide inputs, which are our next values to commit at the next rising edge of the clock. We also have an ALU to actually perform computation, and our data memory, which just like in the textbook is wired up to there, the address, wired up to one of the registers so we can store things from registers into memory. And its output is hardwired into our register file. So we'll show you diagrams like this. And we have all these muxes here and some other control signals, like the ALU takes an operation select. We have a write enable signal for our data memory. And I'm not showing you all those wires. First of all, because there's way too many wires on this already. But it's just convention to try to only show you where the data goes. But there is an input on those wires. And in all these cases, it's something based on the instruction, usually the opcode. And whenever you see a mux like here, that means there's an input there that's computed somehow. And it probably means it's based on the instruction. And most of your job as a processor designer is first of all to lay out the circuit, and secondly, to figure out what all the inputs to those muxes should be based on which instruction you're executing at the time. So let's try to do that. Let's think of a simple instruction. Let's say add R8, R9. So if we're running this instruction, the PC contains the address of the instruction, which is sent to the instruction memory. So the instruction memory is outputting this instruction and some irrelevant bits from the following instruction. And RA is 8, the number corresponding to R8. And RB is 9. And on this circuit diagram, those are hardwired into source A and source B. Which means that, for example, since source A is 8, this output from the register file is the value of register 8. And that's being sent to the data memory, even though it might not use it, and to this mux. So given this, I would suggest, why don't you write down which wire we should select for all four of these muxes. So you have this mux by the PC, which has two inputs. We have these two muxes by the register file, which control the destination register numbers. And we have this mux by the ALU-A input. Yes.
Here
I'm saying that it's not the that I'm telling you that the we've selected the add operation because we know we have to do an add, which means that the output of the ALU is going to be the sum of its inputs and not something else. Yeah.
What is the E
stand for? Where? It's E because it's related to the execute phase. That's where the name comes from. It is not a very good name. Okay, by show of hands, who's figured out what the value for any one of the muxes should be? Anyone? So here, give me just one.
All right. Well, ALU A should be the second.
Yeah, so the input to the ALU should be the second option, because we want to add two register values. So by setting this input to select the second value, we take register 8 and send it to the ALU. And the other register being sent to the ALU is register 9, which means that we'll actually be computing R8 plus R9, which is what the instruction better compute somewhere. And there's no other place to do it other than the ALU. Yeah.
I think DSTM would be like you wouldn't select anything, and then DSTE would be the first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, so we can work forward. Then. So we are going to need to write a result, and we want it to be the sum of the two values. So, we can look at our inputs to the register file and work backwards. Where does this input come from? It comes from the data memory. We don't have any other options. So no matter what we can set destination M to, we're not going to use it because it's never going to store the right value. We can look at the destination E input. It comes from the ALU, which we've just determined by setting this mux will have exactly the value we want to store. So then we just need to look at whether sending it to the RB, that's R9 in this case, actually does the right thing. And if we remember that the destination is on the right side of our instructions, it does. Yeah?
So on the diagram, it goes 8989. Will M and E always mirror, like M, E, and will always mirror A, B?
So with this wiring, so the reason it says 8-9 is because this is the same signal as RA.
Okay.
It's just part of the instruction. Yeah?
For the two wires that are going to the mux, right to the left of the ALU, what mm-hmm. is the top one?
The top one comes from the instruction. It's some bytes, it's the 8 bytes starting 2 bytes into the instruction. Yes, because we certainly don't use a value from the instruction for this app. But there are other instructions where you would want to do that. moves from memory. Yeah.
So we're saying that the next R dest E, that's where we're going to write. So that one's going to work, right?
Yeah.
What about the dest M dest E on the top of it?
Dest M, this one? Or the?
No, like the dest M dest E that has the.
These are the numbers corresponding to these inputs.
And they should, these marks should output 0, right? They're not doing anything.
If you don't want to write to a register, you need to output 15. That's OXF. Because register number 0 is RAX. So if you just if you put 0 in there, yeah, you wouldn't write to R8, but you'd also write to RAX.
So these two muxes, they should output F, right?
Yeah. So there's one mux we haven't taken care of, which is probably the easiest to answer for this question. Yeah, so for the PC, we want PC plus 2. We want to execute the instruction after the add next. There's no reason to go anywhere else. We want to take its address and add its length. And that's going to be the bottom. So when we set all these muxes this way, it's like we've replaced them with wires that connect the appropriate inputs, and the other input just doesn't get used anywhere. It just gets discarded. Still computed, still takes up power, but doesn't actually get used. So any questions about this? Yeah.
I still don't understand what the program counter does.
So the program counter is the address of the machine code for this instruction. So we have, I don't have any chalkboard space. So we have its opcode, its function code, so sick, and then register number in memory, in the that we're getting from the instruction memory. And after it is the machine code for the following instruction in the assembly program. And the PC, yeah, it's the address where that opcode is found. It's the address that we read from the instruction memory to get the opcode. Yeah. So memory at PC plus one is part of is we take the address of the beginning of the instruction, add one, so 1 byte after the beginning of the instruction, what's in memory there? That's what's on this wire.
What does that represent?
So for the add instruction, it is meaningless. So there's other instructions where it is not. But for the add instruction, it's just part of the add instruction and part of the next instruction. It's not useful. But there are other instructions, like jump, where it will be. Any other questions? Yeah.
When would the DSTM and DSTE coming from the instruction memory would like not be F instead of like the A and that?
Well, this is a case where it's not be F. I mean, this is a case where we're taking R9 and send the number 9 corresponding to register 9 and sending it to destination E. Because we better write at least one register from an add instruction.
Oh, because the instruction says you're writing to 9. Register
yes.
9, so that's what happened.
Yes.
So shouldn't there be a connection from the data memory to the PC too?
There are a lot of missing connections on this diagram. Yes. That is not the only one. There are a ton. Okay. So let's try the same exercise, but for a register to memory move. So your goal is to predict the value, the input, which wire we select for each of these four muxes in order to make this execute a move from a register into memory. That what the effects of that instruction.
So
And if you're stuck, I recommend going one by one, starting with the mux by the PC, which is definitely the easiest. Yes. That's an adder. I guess that is surprisingly unclear. I should just write add. Yeah. Well, let's see. So who has an answer for at least two of the muxes? Okay. People in the center and not on the sides, which makes my plan of having people discuss with their neighbor not work well. okay, so as a hint, if you're stuck on these, one way of thinking about this question is to work backwards from what value gets changed. And say, what should be, so you can think of, well, the value that this instruction changes is in memory. So you can work by what value should go in memory, and you can say, where does it need to be? It needs to be on this wire. How do we make sure it's the right value? And you can say, well, what address of memory do we need to change? And you can say, well, that needs to be on this wire somehow. And you can work backwards and say, how do we get the value type of value we need for this instruction on this address wire? And just work backwards, follow this wire to its source, and keep going, and look at all the muxes you pass on the way and decide which choice you should make, knowing that you want an address to be here. I would recommend discussing with your neighbor, unless you have the whole thing figured out. Comparing your answer with your neighbor, or your partial answer. What? Yeah. Seems, yeah. You have more. You have more in there. You have more to figure out.
We're not going to write anything to the register file. And so those are the things that we're looking for. like when I say while I'm restoring it, it's the first input to the box is the instruction. Because that's where, that's the val C that we're trying to write.
Okay, so who has an answer for all the muxes now? There's an answer for, okay. Who has an answer for at least one of them? Okay. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, we want to the PC plus two value here. Well, it's not going to be PC plus two, but it's PC plus instruction length, because the instruction is a bit longer. But yeah, we want to add to the current address of the instruction to get the next instruction. We don't have any other way to know what instruction to run next. There is a value here, but it's not useful. It's basically the displacement of our memory address that we want to write to. It's not related to any instruction we want to run. So who is willing to volunteer an answer for any of the other muxes? Top one? Okay. And why is that?
Because it's trying to get the memory address from instruction memory and then add it to like a zero to output an address in for data memory.
So we don't add it to zero, because if you remember the way our instructions work, we actually need to have a displacement and a base register, and we add the value in that register to a value in the address to form value in the instruction to form the address. But if we, so clearly we do need to use that value from the instruction somewhere. And that's enough to tell you that, well, if this is the only place it goes, we better be using that ALU input. And if we look at how this is wired up, it happens that register B happens to go to the other ALU input. So it works exactly like we want. It actually adds them together, which is what the instruction is supposed to do. So we don't have any extra work. You look like a question?
What was the answer?
So we want the top input.
So here you're adding, sorry.
Yeah, so the RMFQ, you specify a number parentheses register. The number is in the instruction. And the parentheses register means to get the value in that register and add it to that number. Okay. How about any of the two remaining muxes, the ones by the register file? Someone?
Because you're not actually writing to any other registers, both would be at 15.
Yeah. So in this instruction, register to memory move reads from registers, but it doesn't write to any registers. So these should both be to their second values, because we don't actually want to change any of the registers. So that gives us this solution. And so, yeah.
We don't have the read enable on the register files. Does it really matter which address is being feed? The write enable.
So, yeah. So the way we're doing write enable versus not here is with the register numbers. They're all the same signal. So somehow, when we're executing this opcode, we're going to need to have the inputs to all these muxes be such that we're effectively wiring up this PC plus instruction length to the next PC's input, and the part of the instruction memory value into the ALUA's input and so on. That tells us part about the circuit that's not shown, which takes the opcode and produces the input to all the muxes. So I noticed when people were trying to figure out these settings that people really do not like writing things down or drawing things. You may be different, but when I'm figuring something like this out, I like to draw the circuit and like label what values should be on what wires and try to work forwards or backwards. Rather than just staring at it and hoping I can hold enough in my head to figure it out. And you probably will have some problem like this on some test at some point. And it would be good to not just stare at it and hope you'll remember which is which wire in your head, which is not easy to do. Yeah. If it was on paper, it would be with the diagram. I mean, if we give you a quiz online, we might give you the diagram, but drawing on it might not be easy. And I would copy down the relevant piece of the diagram, right? Yeah.
What is that top wire
then? This one, or that? This one is part of. It's the constant from the instruction.
So why does it feed back
into that? These are two parts of the instruction. So some cases, we use part of the instruction as the address of the next program counter, like jump. And in some cases, we use part of the instruction to compute an address. So these two wires are for those cases.
So jump would be the one that goes back.
Yeah.
Would be the one that
would goes forward, yeah. Yeah.
So in the RM, so the register you're moving from the source of this thing, is that in source A or source B?
So that is a good question. Where are the registers in this instruction? And to find that out, you would look at our table of how the instructions are encoded to know which is RA and which is RB. Because the RA and RB here are just fixed parts of the instruction, certain bits of the instruction. If you want to know what those correspond to in assembly language, you need to look at that table. Usually, it's RA is the first one mentioned and RB is the second, but there is an exception. Namely, that it's always the case that the displacement is RB. So the thing next to the displacement, the thing used to compute a memory address is RB, even for the instruction which writes the memory address first for MR move queue. But the way you'd find this out is not by memorizing it, it's by just having the table of how Y86 is encoded in front of you. Okay. Any more questions about this? Yes. Yes, so these determine which registers to write. So whatever register number you put in there, there's going to be a value on this wire, and based on those register numbers, they'll be put in the register. And even if you aren't using the memory, there's still a value on this wire. So we need to tell the register file to a dummy register number so it doesn't overwrite one of the registers we care about. And that's what we're doing here. We're giving it register number 15 when only 0 through 14 are real registers, so that whatever's on this wire out of the data memory, which is useless, doesn't clobber a register that we actually want to use later. Okay. So, as I mentioned, this circuit is missing a whole bunch of wires and muxes. So, yeah, this is not everything we need. And you should be able to figure out if you have enough to do some instructions. Is there some way that you could set up the muxes to execute these instructions. So that's question. So we have a list of four instructions, all the moves, jump, call, push, and ret. So some of these are impossible to do without adding things to this diagram, like extra muxes or extra wires. So try to figure out how many there are. I would encourage you to compare with your neighbor. And also write down which ones you think you can't do. And yes.